Hey, Reg, what are you up to today, my friend? Oh, you're just here to record a podcast. Well, what a coincidence. I'm here to do a podcast. Sometimes it works out just fine. All right, my friend, let's do this thing then. Since we're both here, we might as well record a podcast. You do your thing, I'll do mine. All right? Put your finger on the trigger there, my friend. Put it in the books. 249. All right? Three S's, star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. But most importantly, in addition to listening, get out there and spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget, you can go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and find an abundance of previously recorded podcasts waiting for your ears. There's a lot of them in there, so just keep loading down and scrolling down and loading more is the word. There you go. We've been doing this since 2016. This is episode number 429. So, in the podcast here, I always try to share with you things that are going on, not only in my mind, but also in my life. Personal things, ideas, thoughts, opinions, you name it. As I've said many times, this podcast, ideally, and how it's constructed is basically a dialogue between you and me. Now, hopefully, there's several thousand, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions who are listening. And so the you is not only aimed at you individually, but you collectively. But hopefully, it sounds like it is a conversation just between the two of us. It's just that maybe the two of us are thousands of people. Who knows? But that's the goal. And so as a conversation between a couple of friends, you like to share what's going on in your life, and I certainly want to do that today. Regular listeners to the podcast know that I have been an actor for a good long time now, both amateur and professional. And over the last couple of years, I've been very pleased with the direction that my acting career has gone. I've sort of taken a next step up, if you will, in terms of recognition, which has been very nice. I've been doing a lot of different plays with a lot of different theater groups, but one theater group of which I have great respect for and have worked with now for the third time, this is the third time, and the two previous times, we have not only done successful and well-respected and well-received shows, but also shows that have gotten some recognition within the Chicago area theater community. In terms of not only, as I said before, very positive reviews in the media, but also then recognition by a group that gives out awards for the Chicagoland theater community called the Joseph Jefferson Awards. They are akin to the Tony Awards on Broadway or the Olivier Awards in London's West End. They recognize and celebrate some of the best theater of the previous year. And so certainly if you're an actor in Chicago, being recognized in any way, whether it's a nomination or obviously a victory, a win, is a high honor. Chicago has a thriving theater community. It always has been one, in the aftermath of COVID, when theaters were shut down, the theater community stayed active in any way it could, doing things on Zoom. And as soon as things were safe health-wise, theaters were out and about. And it's still coming back, but some theaters, sadly, were not able to make it through because of the financial stresses that COVID put on so many businesses, like restaurants and so many things. Any kind of enterprise that serve the public certainly had to go through some downtime financially as well as work-wise, whatever you want to call it, during the shutdown of COVID for at least about a year and a half, if not more. Thankfully, as I said, the Chicago theater community, not only the big theaters and the big shows that you see that go to places like the Cadillac Palace or the Chicago Theater the big theaters, as well as the Paramount Theater out in Aurora, or the Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook, or the bigger Chicago-based theaters that do their own original things. A lot of those bigger theaters bring a lot of outside touring kind of shows in, but the theaters like Steppenwolf or the Goodman are Chicago-based theaters that have received national, if not international, recognition and awards for the great work. So Chicago has always had a respected and thriving and active, creative, influential theater community, and I'm excited to be a part of it. And so, as I said, I'm over the last couple of years very proud to have been a part of two Jeff nominated productions with Invictus Theater, which has been around for about 7 or 8 years now in the Chicago area, and over the last 3 or 4 has really begun to establish itself for putting on bold productions and interesting productions and productions that make people think and feel, a combination of newer plays, classic plays, Shakespeare plays. It's founded by a very creative guy named Charles Askenizer. And he has directed me in those two previous shows and now in the show that I'm doing now. I'm going to tell you about that one, but really quick. So in 2002, I saw an audition notice for a play that I've always wanted to do. I saw the film version of it many times over the years. Originally, the film version from 1960, maybe 4, 5, 66, with Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor and Sandy Dennis and George Siegel. A film adaptation directed by Mike Nichols, one of the great creative minds of theater and films. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, written by a well-respected and I believe Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, Edward Albee. I always wanted to play the role that Richard Burton played, George. It's only 4 people in the show. It's a very contentious, a very lively, a very emotional and emotive and conflicting, very intense play. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, with two married couples that get together over a drunken evening, and a lot of truth and a lot of secrets and a lot of mayhem takes place over the course of a few hours during a revealing after party, if you will. There was a little campus party that takes place on a campus with the teachers, and then this is the after party where a couple of couples get together, and wow, it's been done on Broadway many times. The film is very well known, as I said. Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor and Sandy Dennis both won Academy Awards for their portrayals, and so I've always loved the movie. And I saw an audition notice. I had never heard of Invictus Theater before, but I saw that they were doing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And so I said, well, I've always wanted to play the role of George, so I'm going to go and audition for this, even though I don't know anything about them, and they probably don't know anything about me. But at the very least, my goal was I'll get to read a couple of scenes of the character. So if I never even get to play George, at least I'll have gotten a chance to read some of those scenes out loud with another actor and actress. So that was kind of my initial goal. And as fate would have it, I got cast. I got the role that I wanted of George. We did the show in 2022. It ran for a month and a half or so, to rave reviews. Ultimately, the show was nominated for, I believe, 6 or 7 Jeff Awards. It won 4, including Best Play of the Year in the non-equity category for the Jeff Awards. And I, along with two of my other castmates, was nominated for individual awards. And I was nominated for the best performer in a play, which was an amazing honor. I couldn't believe it. This was a role in a play I always wanted to do, and so to have been recognized for this by this group, which has recognized some of the best Chicago actors who have gone on to huge fame around the world. Jeff nominated and Jeff winning actors include people like Joe Mantegna and John Malkovich and Gary Sinise and Michael Shannon and Laurie Metcalf and Joan Allen. I mean, the list goes on and on of great Chicago actors who have gone on to in prominence in the world of acting, who got their start right here in Chicago. And so just to be nominated, when you consider how many shows are produced each year, is a high honor. I mean, you can't downplay that. But of course, anytime you're nominated for an award, you want to win, right? And so it was certainly a great honor to have been in the play that got Best Play. Considering there were only 4 actors in it, I think we must have done a pretty good job. And in fact, the actress who was nominated in the Best Supporting Actress role, Rachel Livingston, won in her category, as did our director Charles Askenheiser and our set designer as well. So it was a great evening, and it was a great memory, and it was a great play, and I will always hold a great a special place for it in my heart. And then last year, again with Invictus, we did another classic play written by Arthur Miller, who was known for many plays, including Death of a Salesman and View from the Bridge and All My Sons. And of course, this play was called The Crucible, which many people may have read or seen in a high school or college production. It's always a play that's always been done on a variety of levels, amateur, school, as well as professionally. And it is a story about the Salem witch trials, in 1642 here in the United States, but also is meant as an allegory for what was going on in the 1950s during the blacklist, where many people, especially many people in the artistic community, in the entertainment community, were being blacklisted and being forced to tell on their friends or their colleagues, much as the witch trials happened in Salem in 1692. And so Arthur Miller was trying to show that things really haven't changed in 200 or 300 years, have they? And it's a classic play, so well written, just like Virginia Woolf, hugely influential and very intense. The term crucible is about attention in a small place, which is what Salem was at that time. It was a crucible of tension and fear and disloyalty in this small community, as people were afraid to be branded as a witch, and so they cast doubt or cast guilt on other people, and some of them their best friends, just to keep the guilt away from them, much like the blacklist of the 1950s, headed up by Senator Joe McCarthy. In fact, Arthur Miller was called to testify in front of the Senate committee, the un-American, as it was called, Senate committee, in which he declined to do so. Many people did tell on their friends. Others did not. It was a very difficult time for people in that situation, professionally as well as personally. The people lost their jobs. That's where the blacklist term came. Those people that were blacklisted, if they had connections to supposed connections to anything in Russia or communist based, there was a great Red Scare in the 50s after World War II that the communists were going to start to take over the world. And so there was paranoia, there was fear. And as I said many times on this podcast, when you throw that into the human experience, a lot of times bad things can happen. I was once again fortunate to be cast in that play as one of the great roles in the play, about as the judge, the deputy governor Danforth. And once again, that play received rave reviews last year, last summer, and ultimately we were nominated again for 8 nominations, including Best Play and including Best Ensemble, and I also got a personal nomination for my performance in a supporting role. So once again, over the last 2 years, it's been very satisfying and very rewarding to work with this group who do great work, and I get along well with them, and they certainly have come to respect my work, which is so nice to have that kind of support. And so after got 2 winners in the bag, why not try for 3? And so when we were finishing up the Crucible, I was talking to our director, Charles Askenizer, and saying, so what do you have planned for next year? I want to make sure I keep my schedule open if there's some play that, I want to audition for and make sure that I get a shot, that my schedule is open, I'm not going to be out of town or something. And he mentioned, I'm trying to get the rights to the play version of the film Network. Whew. I have to tell you, I almost took 3 steps back. It was like I got hit by a truck when I heard that, because the film Network that came out in 1976, which starred William Holden and Faye Dunaway and Peter Finch and Robert Duvall, among many others, was a multi Academy Award winning film that was written by an Academy Award winning screenwriter named Paddy Chayefsky. I've been a fan of this film for as long as I can remember. I always have watched it whenever I can. It's on Turner Classic Movies. Now it's on streaming services. I rented it back in the day when you could rent it. I saw it on TV when it was on TV way, way back. I have continued to watch this movie since it came out, even though I was a very young kid. And a lot of what was happening or what was going on at the time when I first saw it, I admittedly was over my head, but I was struck by the characters and the performances that were so exhilarating that it made up for what I didn't understand, maybe what was going on completely, because I was a little younger. I couldn't help but be captivated by the performances, especially the performance by Peter Finch as the character named Howard Beale. Network came out, as I said, in 1976, and it was a very contemporary film. It took place in the modern day. It took place in 1975, right when it was filmed, right when it was written. And why the film was so influential at the time, it was so captivating, compelling at the time, is ironically only foreshadowed as to how relevant it is almost 50 years later. It's called Network. It's about network television. In this case, namely network television news in the mid-70s. I would urge you to see this film if you never did. I guarantee you, you will come away a fan. It's called Network. You can find it, I'm pretty sure, on a streaming service, probably Amazon Prime. I would start there. But it takes place, and it was meant to be, and at the time it was, written as a dark and absurdist satire on the state and the potential state of television in general, and specifically network news, and how entertainment was beginning to creep its way into the news, and what Paddy Chayefsky was trying to do was write a cautionary tale that this is not good. That news should not be blended with entertainment. News needs to be news. News needs to be facts. News needs to be objective. If you listen to this podcast over the years, you know I come from a media-trained background. I don't know, but perhaps seeing this film as a young kid, not even a teenager, I have to think that it had some influence on me to want to get into the media. One of the internships that I had in college was in television news right here in Chicago at Channel 2, WBBM. At the time, one of the top-rated news stations in the city, and had been for years. I have to think that my interest and my obsession to some extent with this film, when I saw as a young kid, it looked so otherworldly, if you will, and so appealing and so attractive in terms of the excitement and the energy of the newsroom and what was happening, and certainly the ability of being on television. Once again, I'm a performer. I'm an actor, right? I mean, I'm on the radio. I mean, I'm performing one way or the other. So I really do believe that seeing Network as a young kid certainly had an impact on me later when I decided to, what do I want to do with my life and my career? Never thinking that I would ever, at that time, certainly, and even years after, think that I would ever get a chance to play one of the characters in this film. So it came out in 1976. As I said, it started as an absurdist kind of satire, taking the contemporary news of the day and then imagining it going off the rails. The irony is that what Paddy Chayefsky wrote in 1975 and what this film showed in 1976, the film is eerily prophetic. So much of what Chayefsky wrote to be satirical and absurdist that you could never imagine this ever being on television, which is where the story got its dark humor from, because it took reality and then took it to bounds that seemed incredulous and out of this world, an unreality, if you will. And the irony is, in 2024, what Chayefsky talks about, not only specifically, but even hints at in some places in this story, is commonplace in 2024. He nailed it. He saw what was coming almost to the letter. And that's what's so, you have to respect this play and this film, and then later a play based on it, because of how prophetic it was. It was a cautionary tale that clearly we did not pay attention to. But within it, Chayefsky is warning us about what we are going through right now. We are in a divisive society. We are in a society filled with misinformation. While Paddy Chayefsky certainly didn't predict the internet, you can easily swap the statements he makes about television and its influence and what it can do to people and the power it has, and how we need to be careful as to who controls this powerful tool. At that time, television, which was only 20 years old or so. But you can swap out the internet for television, and it is, and this play is as relevant today as ever. And that's great writing. When the movie came out, as I said, I was maybe 12 or something like that. Now, in 1976, don't forget, Rocky came out, right? Rocky came out with Sylvester Stallone. If you were people of all ages were just sucked into this great underdog story, written and starring Sylvester Stallone as Rocky Balboa, the great underdog, the southpaw who goes up against a flamboyant world champion boxer, in many ways emulated or drawn off of the big personality of the boxer at the time, Muhammad Ali, the world champion, tying in the bicentennial. And don't forget, in 2026, we're going to be 250 years old. So it's as relevant as ever, as almost 50 years go by, and this country will be 250 years old. So the 1976 and 2026 have a lot in common. Sadly, we are still facing many of the same issues politically, the same issues culturally, the same issues behaviorally that we did 50 years ago. That's unfortunate. We have certainly moved ahead in some areas, but in some areas we have not only not moved ahead, we've probably moved behind. But as I said, so as a preteen and as a kid in grammar school, when Rocky comes out, my God, I mean, how could you not just fall in love with this movie? I had Rocky posters and I saw Rocky, I can't tell you how many times. I had the album, played Gonna Fly Now, started to run and work out to the album. I used to have a little, if you remember, Rocky used to walk around and bounce like a handball when he would walk around. So I started bouncing a handball around. I mean, I just was, Rocky was my guy in 1976. And so when it came time for the Academy Award nominations, not surprisingly, Rocky was nominated for several awards, including Best Picture. Sylvester Stallone was nominated for Best Actor. I believe he may have been even nominated for Best Screenplay because he wrote the screenplay. The director was nominated. Rocky was up for, you know, Best Soundtrack. You name it. Was a dominant, multi-nominated Oscar film in 1976. But so was this other movie, which, you know, if you're a preteen, if you're a little kid, you're not really paying attention to what I would consider the adult movie of the day. There's no question that Rocky spanned many age groups. Adults loved it just like anyone else did. But at the same time, there was this other film that was getting a lot of attention, and it was called Network. And it, you know, I never heard of it before, really. It was, again, I'm not paying attention to this. I don't know about television news. I mean, I used to watch the news, but I was a little kid. I was more interested in sports and Rocky. Meanwhile, I guess this movie Network comes out, and it's getting all these accolades as well. And it sort of seemed like the adult movie of the time, of that year. You know, Rocky was the kid movie and kind of the mass appeal movie. And Network was kind of the adult kind of movie. So obviously that wasn't really my, that wasn't really on my radar screen. I was Rocky. Well, when it comes down to, you know, what we're going to do, now it's 1977, of course, don't forget. You know, the film came out in 1975, but for the Oscars, and this would be, 1977 Oscars actual presentation. So Rocky is, you know, my favorite. I mean, this is it, Rocky. In my world, Rocky is supposed to win everything. And so I'm hearing a lot about, you know, and seeing this this other film called Network, getting all these nominations. Network, Peter Finch nominated for Best Actor, and Ned Beatty nominated in the supporting actor role, and Faye Dunaway nominated for Best Actress, and Beatrice Straight nominated for Best Supporting Actress, I think Sidney Lumet nominated for Best Director, and obviously the film nominated for Best Film, and Paddy Chayefsky nominated for the Best Screenplay. And so when it comes to watching the Oscars that night, you know, you're constantly hearing Network, Network, Network. Well, I was happy when Best Film went to Rocky. Okay. Very excited. But before the Best Picture nomination was announced, which is usually the last one, Best Actor came up. Well, of course, it's got to be Sylvester Stallone as Rocky, right? I mean, come on. Well, the winner, I forgot to mention William Holden also nominated in the Best Actor role. So I'm watching this, and the winner is Peter Finch for Network. And I'm like, Peter Finch? Who is he? And what is this Network that I keep hearing about? Because Faye Dunaway won for it. Paddy Chayefsky won. you know, what is this thing? As I said before, it was like the adult movie of the year. There were some other movies like that. I mean, All the President's Men came out that year. Marathon Man came out that year. Taxi Driver came out that year. You know, no question. But it seemed like it was Network and Rocky that got the bulk of the nominations. And so I, as a little kid who loved Rocky, I was like, who the heck is Peter Finch? And how could he beat Sylvester Stallone? And ironically, Peter Finch sadly died. He was nominated. He was alive when he was nominated, so he realized he got nominated. But sadly, he passed away before the actual ceremony. And so he became the first, and now I think there's two, because Heath Ledger also won an award after he was dead, but Peter Finch became the first posthumous Best Actor winner. He had passed away before the actual ceremony. So he never saw and never lived to know that he won the award, which is sad. I'm gladly he lived to see himself get nominated. And so I was like very disappointed until several months later, maybe even a year later, when Network was shown on television. And you would see every so often, once again, you have to understand what it was like in 1975, 1976, 1977. You didn't have access. There was no such thing as YouTube. There weren't streaming services. There wasn't anything on demand. You were relegated to what was out there, decided by television executives and movie executives. There were some second-run movie houses that would show films from the past year, but not a lot of them. Most of them all showed first-run movies. That's where the money was. You couldn't go onto YouTube and just punch up Peter Finch in Network and see some of his scenes from the film. Now, the most famous scene of Peter Finch's and of Network is a tremendous, probably more, not even more than 5 minutes, scene in which a distraught and potentially emotionally unhinged Howard Beale, who is the well-known and longtime Network anchorman, much in the vein of like a Walter Cronkite of the time, who is widowed and is an alcoholic and then is fired. And this job was his whole life. And he's been there for many years. He's kind of the grand man of the news. And he loses his job, the last thing he had going for him in his life. He lost his family. He didn't have any kids. He lost his wife. He's been drinking. And now he lost the only thing that grounded him, which was this job that gave him prominence and prestige and a place to go. And now he was losing that because his ratings were slowly going down because of his personal problems. And he goes off the edge. And while he's fired, he bursts back into the studio and gives this rousing speech on the air, live, during the news, breaks in during the news, and gives this angry, raving speech that basically speaks to the people of the time. 1975 was very similar to 2024, almost 50 years ago. The film takes place in 75. There was inflation. There was the ending of the Vietnam War. There was the aftermath in politics of Watergate and questioning authority and questioning who was right and who was wrong. We were very divided as a country in many ways. There was high crime. There were wars around the world. As I said, Vietnam. Sound familiar? Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Well, as I said, in those days, we didn't have, there was no 24-hour news service. There were basically three networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And that's where you got your majority of the news. Walter Cronkite, who was one of the most famous anchormen in the history of television, was once referred to and regarded as the most trusted man in America, more than the president. He read the news every night. People trusted him. He read it in a very direct, objective view of just the news, no opinion, just read the news. And he read it in such a way that people trusted him. They believed what he said. And they formed their opinions based on the newscast that Walter Cronkite gave every night. And that's kind of who the Howard Beale character is fashioned after. Well, imagine if this most trusted person goes off the deep end and suddenly begins to articulate the frustration and desperation and anger that the average person is feeling during this time of high inflation and non-trust in government and divisive thoughts and high crime. And the Russians, and unemployment figures, and high gas prices. It's eerily similar. It really is. I'm not making any of this up. And so Howard Beale goes on the air and basically says, we know things are bad. And ultimately gives this phrase that has become a piece of Hollywood history. He's so angry. He looks right into the camera and says, you've got to get mad and you've got to say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And you can go on YouTube and hit Peter Finch, hit network, hit mad as hell, and you'll see it. And you'll see why Peter Finch deserved to win the Academy Award. And you'll understand why, even though I was such a Sylvester Stallone Rocky fan, when I saw network and I saw that film, and I saw that scene, I didn't really understand it. As I said, I was a little kid. I wasn't feeling the impacts of inflation or oil prices. I was a little kid, but I knew my parents were talking about it. But I saw the intensity of that performance, and I was moved by it. And I said, I don't know what this is about, really. I don't know what that movie Network is about, but just seeing that, Peter Finch did deserve to win that Academy Award over Sylvester Stallone. Sure, I loved Rocky, and I loved Rocky Balboa, and I loved the movie, and I loved Sylvester Stallone's portrayal, but when I saw Peter Finch as Howard Beale in Network, well, I completely didn't understand it. I couldn't help be moved by it. And it stayed with me for this long, for almost 50 years. And to get a chance now to be Howard Beale is something I never could have imagined, and something that I am, again, honored and privileged, and I take so seriously. In 2017, the writer who wrote both the screenplay and the stage musical for Billy Elliot, a guy named Lee Hall, he also wrote the screenplay for the Elton John film Rocket Man, decided to adapt the film Network for the stage and made a theatrical piece out of it. And the writing, Paddy Chayefsky, as I said, who won the Academy Award for this original script, passed away, sadly, about very soon after Network in the early 80s. But the movie continued to be a favorite of people's as the years have gone by. It continued to resonate with people. As I said, it was eerily prophetic. When you talk about not only the Howard Beale character and this rage and what was happening at the time in 1975 what's happening now, but also Chayefsky's original vision of the satire of where the news and television was going and how it was influencing people. He warned about big corporations buying networks and having influence on the media that weren't media-based but came from other areas to perhaps push their own agendas. Well, Disney owns ABC. Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. Today, most of the movie studios and the TV networks are owned by entertainment companies, not by original news companies. CBS is not owned by the Columbia Broadcasting System anymore. NBC is owned by Comcast. Comcast is the country's biggest cable television entertainment company, Universal. You ever see those movies where it says Universal Studios? Yeah, they have a tour. They own NBC. Disney owns ABC. Warner Brothers. I don't even know who owns CBS now. At one time, they were all solely owned, and they were owned by people who had a stake in, they were journalists or had, who had a background in journalism. That's not the case anymore. Chayefsky predicted that and warned about it. He also warned about the entertainment value coming into the news. As I said before, in 1975, the news was delivered by Howard K. Smith or Harry Reasoner or Walter Cronkite. Very straight. It was almost like they were reading the newspaper on television. There wasn't a lot of opinion. Now that's all we see. On the 24 News on the 24 news networks, even the anchor people who are supposedly delivering the news, they make comments. It's so subtle now, it's so commonplace that you might not even realize it. But even if an anchor man or anchor woman who's reading the news says, "Wow, that's a serious problem," or "Wow, good story, Tom." That's subjective. That's editorial comment. That's not the way the news was delivered 50 years ago. Walter Cronkite, when the story was finished, he went on to the next one. He didn't say, "Nice job, Tom. Wow, that's interesting. Wow, did you know that?" No. There was a lineup of stories and he read them. Today, not only do we, every news channel every 2 seconds has a panel of five people totally spewing their own opinions, their own narratives, their own facts that support their opinions. And that's what this story is about in many ways. Howard Beale goes from a very objective anchorman reporting the news in a very dignified, respectful, objective way, and he turns into the nickname. He becomes the mad prophet of the airwaves. He starts denouncing the hypocrisies of our time. He starts to talk and articulate what's happening in people's lives and the frustrations that they're feeling in the 70s with the inflation and the oil crisis and the wars and the unemployment and everything. And he becomes an entertainer disguised as a newsman. It's very similar to what we see later in years with the Phil Donahue show and the Oprah show and Geraldo. It was prophesized by Paddy Chayefsky in 1975. Even hints of reality television. There are some terrorist groups that do their crimes, and it's and the crimes, they're literally capital offenses, and they're shown on television, live or taped. It's a precursor to what we now call reality television. So between the disintegration of the objectivity of TV news and with entertainment values coming in to the news, how many times do you see the news? And, you know, the stories, you say, well, why is this news? I mean, do you watch the weather forecast today? They have pictures that people take of clouds. I mean, where does that fit? That never would have happened 50 years ago. And you could say, well, what's wrong with that, Jim? I'm not saying it's, I'm just saying is that we have become, it's become such a part of what we see that we don't realize, but does that really have a place in the news? Does it really have a place in the weather forecast? Why? But slowly, the objectivity and the news and fact-based essence and mission of the news has given way to entertainment value. The news on television used to be viewed as a sacred public trust. In fact, networks were in many ways forced to have a news division in order to keep their license. The United States, the FCC said, if we're going to give you this license to broadcast all this stuff, you have to at least have some kind of attention to serving the public good through news. That's why news played such a major role in the networks in the early days. That's why people like Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow and so many others became prominent figures, because the news was prominent, because it was serious, and it was presented in a very serious way as a public trust that we were doing some good for the people. Yes, we were providing you entertainment with Uncle Milty and Steve Allen and the Honeymooners and Ernie Kovacs and Lucy and Sergeant Bilko. But we were also bringing you information that you needed to know about that was going on in your lives, in the world, that was impacting you one way or the other. It was a public service. It was a public trust. And that is gone. If you look at morning news now, it's mostly, there's news thrown into comedy bits. The entertainment value, the entertainment faction is now a part of news. It never used to be. And if Edward R. Murrow or Walter Cronkite saw what was going on newscast today, they wouldn't believe it. But Paddy Chayefsky took what was happening and extrapolated it and came up with an absurd situation that, ironically, the absurdity has become reality. That's the ultimate satire. It's like when you watch Spinal Tap. The iron. Why is Spinal Tap considered such a great film? It's not only is it funny, but it was a satirical comedy that skewered and represented its topic, the rock and roll world, with such accuracy and irony and comedy that it, for many people, it didn't even look like a mockumentary or a fake documentary. It looked like it was real. People actually thought Spinal Tap was a real band. And then in the great fruition of that, this made up fake band in a mockumentary about them became a real band who put out albums and went on in concert. That's the ultimate. You can't get any better from a satire if you become real. You take something unreal and you become real because you did it so well. And you skewered it so well, but you portrayed it with such realism that people couldn't tell the difference. And that's what Network has become. So in 2017, Lee Hall adapted the play for the stage with Bryan Cranston as Howard Beale. Changed a little of the focus because some of the things were dated that it talked about, but kept the essence of it, and in many ways kept almost all the dialogue word for word, because Chayefsky's writing is almost Shakespearean. You don't want to mess with it. He won the Academy Award for Best Screenplay. They moved a few little scenes around. They changed a few things. But the essence of the film that Chayefsky wrote and the essence of all the dialogue he wrote for all the characters is basically word for word. It's an homage to Paddy Chayefsky in many ways. And Bryan Cranston played the role that Peter Finch won the Academy Award for, the deranged, mad prophet of the airwaves, Howard Beale, in the stage version. It debuted in 2017 in London and the West End in their theater area. And then in 2018 and 2019, it came to Broadway. Well, how could I not see Network on stage with Bryan Cranston? I went and saw it in 2019. In fact, I did a double whammy. I was in New York to see Elton John in 2019. And so I saw Bryan Cranston and Network in the afternoon matinee, and I saw Elton in the evening. And I was once again captivated by Bryan Cranston's portrayal. He didn't mimic, he didn't do Peter Finch's portrayal. While the words were the same, he brought a different kind of view of Howard Beale. A little more updated. But the same language was there, and that same I'm as mad as hell scene was there, practically word for word. So much so that the play was played for almost a year. And, of course, Bryan Cranston not only won the Olivier Award for Best Actor in London, but then he also won the Tony Award for Best Actor in Network. Needless to say, when I saw that play, now I had been acting. It had been several decades since I was a little kid when I first saw Network. And even though I've loved the movie for years and years and years, I got to see Bryan Cranston do it in person. In fact, I went by myself and I had a second row seat. And during one part in the play, Bryan Cranston comes into the audience and delivers a monologue sitting in a seat in the audience. And as luck would have it, I was one seat away. He was literally 5 feet away from me for about 5 minutes delivering this monologue. It was an incredible moment, especially not only for a fan of Network, a fan of Bryan Cranston, but then a fan of Howard Beale and an actor, to see one of the great actors of our time performing literally maybe 3 or 4 feet away from me, sitting down in a chair. It was unforgettable. Now, I never at that time even thought that I would ever get a chance to play Howard Beale. Who would have thought? So, as I said, last summer when I became aware that perhaps Invictus might be doing this play, I had my sights set on getting that role. I knew I was going to have to audition for it, but I have been studying for the last year. I've been watching the movie. I've been trying to think as much as I could about what I remembered from Bryan Cranston's performance, even though it was 5 or 6 years ago now. I looked up information, interviews with Bryan Cranston he'd done to promote it. I found old clips of Paddy Chayefsky and talking about Network. I really did my homework. I really wanted this role so bad. I wanted to be Howard Beale. I've been Howard Beale. I've been the mad prophet of the airwaves. I've been on the radio spouting my opinions. And I worked in a newsroom, as I said, as an intern. I drew upon all that that experience that I've had in the media for the last 30 years. And I am honored and privileged to say that I did win the role. And so this podcast appears, will be posted on, April 12th? On August 12th, which is the day before the first preview. The first time we'll be doing the show for the public. And we open on August 19th here in Chicago. And I have to say that I am having the time of my life bringing my version of Howard Beale to the stage. No question, I have been influenced by Peter Finch and by Bryan Cranston, but at the same time, I'm trying to find ways to make Howard Beale new and different and not an interpretation and certainly not an impersonation of either Peter Finch or Bryan Cranston. It's impossible to erase them from my memory, but what I'm trying to do is bring some of their inspiration to me and make the role my own. And with the help of our director, Charles Askenizer, we are exploring and doing that, and I am having the time of my life. And I can't wait to perform this for an audience. We've been rehearsing now for more than a month, and I am just chomping at the bit to do this for an audience and to see their reaction. I am so impressed. I am challenged and inspired by my cast, our cast. In the various roles, everybody from the biggest roles to the smallest roles to the understudies, everybody is at the top of their game and bringing so much energy and so much inspiration. It's like I'm plugged into something every day. I'm just getting this shot of adrenaline every day that I go to rehearse. And so what's exciting for me is not only to be able to play this part, to deliver that I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore segment and all the other parts that Howard Beale plays, but also, as I said before, deliver this piece of theater, this that is so moving and so intense and so relevant in today's world. And the set is exciting, and there's an energy on the stage. And Paddy Chayefsky and Lee Hall's work here is so resonating and so contemporary, even though it's based on work that's over 50, almost 50 years old. So I hope that audiences come here and feel the irony and see the satire, and also look at this play and say, wow, this happened in 1975, and get that connection and see how things have changed and how prophetic this was. And hopefully they then will be inspired, if they've never seen the movie, to see the movie of which it was based on. Network is one of these films that a lot of people have heard about. And they may have seen the I'm Mad as Hell scene, but they may have not have seen the whole film. My hope is that if they're coming to our play blind, having never seen the film, that not only will they enjoy it and be moved and get angry and leave their emotionally touched as well as intellectually touched, like, wow, maybe we should listen to what the cautionary tale of this play is, and maybe we need to make some changes as to how we personally get our news and how we personally form our opinions. For this play to be staged right now, we open on the day on the first day of the Democratic National Convention held in Chicago. We will be opening on that day, and we will be running during the convention, and we run till the end of September. So we will be playing and talking about how news is digested, how it is presented in the midst of the presidential campaign, which will be in full gear by the time we end. With debates having done and being in September, we run from August 19th, officially opening night, to September 29th. So while we are talking about news and information and the entertainment value and opinion in news, you will be, the public will be subject to that every day in real life. The timing for this play couldn't be better. I am excited to be playing this role. I'm excited to be able to present this piece and deliver some of this message to people that hopefully gets people to think. And I mention this to you because not only is this really important to me, and as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I just like to share with you what I'm doing and what excites me. And I can't tell you right now, there's nothing more that's exciting me than being in this play, and I can't wait to present it. And for those of you who live in the Chicago area, I would just ask you, even if you're not a big playgoer, to, regardless that I'm in it or not, it's such an important piece. It's so relevant in today's world that I hope that maybe you could find time to see this play. So I'm just going to give a little free plug here. You can go to Invictus, Invictus, Theater, Theatre, co.com. That's the website. You can get ticket information, performance. There's 5 shows a week. We go from Friday, 2 on Saturday, matinee on Saturday, and an evening on Saturday, matinee on Sunday, and another show on Monday evening. So Friday through Monday, every week, 5 shows a week. Previews on August 13th, 15th, 16th, or 16th, 17th, 18th, and then opening night on August 19th. And then we go every Friday through Monday through September 29th. So more than a month and a half of shows. I would love for you to come and see this show because it is very close to my heart from when I was a little kid, and the chance to bring this to the stage and bring and make this come alive in a new way is so exhilarating and exciting for me personally as an actor and a performer and someone creative and as someone in the media. It plays into the experiences that I've had in my life. So it really is a great aligning of the stars. At the very least, if you don't come to see the play, I would urge you, please, watch the movie, Network, 1976. I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon. William Holden, Faye Dunaway, Robert Duvall, Peter Finch, Beatrice Straight, Ned Beatty, excuse me, written and won the Academy Award, Patty Chayefsky. Directed by Sidney Lumet, one of the great directors of all time. 12 Angry Men. it's an amazing film. So at the very least, if you're not going to come and see the play, I wish you would at least watch the movie. Because I think you will be amazed at how prophetic this movie was and how it foresaw so many things that today we take for granted.
that we just accept as common knowledge. A great, great movie, a great, great stage play, and I am expecting it to be a very great, great production offered by Invictus Theater here in Chicago. The theater itself is located on Irving Park Road near Kedzie. As I said, you go to InvictusTheater.com and you can find all the information about where it is, performances, ticket availability, and the whole thing. But I can't wait to become Howard Beale for those audiences for the next several months, for the next month and a half. So I'll just give you a quick preview as I say, please watch the Film Network. Please, if you have the time, come to our play. Because if you don't, I'll be mad as hell. And I'm not going to take it anymore. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 429. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.